Good morning. We look forward to being in Genesis chapter 45 this morning. If you turn with me to Genesis 45, looking at the life of Joseph. Joseph, as you'll recall with me, dreaming two dreams at the age of 17, his brothers hating him because he was Jacob's favorite son, sold into slavery by his brothers, carried into Egypt, bought or purchased off of the slave block by Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard in Egypt. Potiphar's wife then, seeing Joseph longing after him, demands that he lie with her. He refuses, and she eventually accuses Joseph of assaulting her. Joseph then, in his innocence, is thrown into prison by Potiphar. It is there in the prison, as we watched his life unfold, that Joseph would interpret the dreams of Pharaoh's chief butler and his chief baker. Remember, Joseph asked the butler to remember him when he's restored to his position, but the butler forgets Joseph for 2 years. After 2 years, Pharaoh has two dreams that are so disturbing for him that he demands an interpreter who can rightly interpret the meaning of the two dreams. The butler remembers Joseph. At that time, he is called out of prison to stand before Pharaoh, where he will accurately interpret the dreams. It is on that very day that Joseph rises to second in power in all of the land of Egypt, and he prepares that nation for 7 years of plenty. He handles that correctly, and then all of that preparation is for the 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh has entrusted everything to Joseph, which is what we've seen in his life repeatedly. When he's comes to a place to work or a place where he's going to dwell or just be, whether it's Potiphar's house or prison or standing in front of Pharaoh, his character never changes. His ability to discern things that are going on around him never changes. He is solid as a rock. And I'm bringing up his past and these difficult things that fell upon him because it's part of what chapter 45 is going to show us. That in all of that difficulty, there's no anger, there's no vengeance or bitterness in Joseph. We don't see one bit of it. He won't even allow it. When it's offered to him to be angry, he will not take that. He doesn't even want to talk about that, which to me shows how amazing his character is. We watched the famine bring the whole known world to its knees, and Joseph's brothers were forced to come to Egypt for food, and it is there that they will bow down before him and fulfill those dreams. Remember now, Joseph wants to see Benjamin. Benjamin is not with the brothers, so he accuses his brothers of being spies, and he keeps Simeon in prison until the brothers come back with Benjamin. Joseph then puts all of his brothers through several tests to see how they feel about Benjamin and if they've changed their ways when it comes to the favorite son, the only remaining son of Rachel. Last Sunday, we watched Joseph, his final test that was given to his brothers, and Judah, remember Judah in his words to Joseph, he stepped up for Benjamin and he told Joseph everything that had taken place, word for word, just as it had happened. He told him the truth. Genesis 44 in verse 32, Judah says, "For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father.'" Again, Judah, a picture, a foreshadowing of Jesus Christ in this moment. "Now, therefore," in verse 33, "please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father? Keep me, let him be free." And the beautiful picture there is that, remember, Benjamin is the one found guilty because the cup was in his sack. So as far as the brothers are concerned, Joseph took the cup. They don't know why or what crossed his mind to do such a thing. They're not even sure he did it. They just don't know. But Judah says, though he's guilty, take me. I'll pay the price. Because there's something greater going on than me and my life. And that is a beautiful picture of Jesus for us as we look at Judah. Now, chapter 45 and verse 1, we talked about the emotion that has to be going on within Joseph. We're going to see it here just spill over. He's listening to his brother Judah speak on behalf of the youngest brother, saying, let him go home to his father. That's all that matters to me. Chapter 45 in verse 1, then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, make everyone go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians of the house of Pharaoh heard it. The brothers are standing before Joseph. Judah certainly begged him, and he's pleading with him. Now Joseph cries out, everyone go out from me. Remember, he is the most powerful man in the world except for Pharaoh. And he doesn't say this in the Hebrew. He's still speaking in Egyptian. So he says, everyone go out. And all the servants of his house in Egypt, they run out. And the only people left are the brothers. What are you thinking if you're a brother and you're in big trouble? What did he just say? Because they just took off and now it's just us standing before him. Did he say, go get the executioner? They don't know. And that would have been a scary moment for them. He's still speaking in Egyptian. But he reveals himself. He cries aloud after Judah begs for his mercy. And that's a beautiful picture. Now, he has been speaking ever since they've seen him in Egypt. He has been speaking to them in the Egyptian language. Let's watch chapter 45 and verse 3. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer, for they were dismayed in his presence. I imagine they were. Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Oh no. Joseph speaks to them for the first time in Hebrew since they sold him and watched him ride off with foreigners. And he says to them in Hebrew, Yani Yosef. Not Egyptian, Hebrew. And they look at it. Can you imagine these brothers, 11 brothers looking at him and what did he just? Come near to me. Yani Yosef. The impact that would have had on these brothers is amazing. He says to them, does my father still live? Every time they've spoken to him so far, they say, our father, your servant. Our father said this, your servant. Our father, your servant said this. They have no clue it's Joseph. And now for the first time he says to them, instead of does your father still live, he says, does my father still live? And they were dismayed in his presence. I can only imagine the fear that would come over you to say, as you begin to process, that's my brother. And the last time we saw him, it was not good. He was crying out from a pit. He says to them a second time, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now, this really solidifies that this is him because nobody knows that except the brothers. Remember, 10 brothers know that. Joseph knows that. No one else in the world knows that that's how that happened. This is the first time, by the way, that Benjamin has heard the truth about Joseph. Benjamin, as a baby, has been told his entire life, your brother was torn apart by a wild animal. Every time they speak of Joseph, they say, one brother is no more, and there is our youngest. Every time. Now, this brother who's been dead for 25 years says, I'm Joseph, whom you sold into slavery. Benjamin, for the first time, hearing the truth. What's he thinking as he stands there, 25 years old, looking upon his brother? It's an amazing moment in time. He says to them, come near to me. That's important too. Come close. No more pretending. I need you in front of me. I need you with me. I need to embrace you. Genesis 45 and verse 5. Watch what he says. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. You sold me, God sent me. Don't be angry, do not be grieved. It's not you that sold, it's God who sent. Joseph is not just saying that because he's kind of on his high horse here and wants to take the high road and impress his brothers. He believes it, he knows it, and he understands it with all of his heart. This is where we want to be in our lives. You sold me. That's true. God sent me. And that's the bigger and the greater truth. And that's what we have to take hold of. If he doesn't get that, he'll never forgive his brothers. If this has not come to light for him, he will never forgive them. And somewhere in all of this difficult process, he begins to understand, this is not my brothers. God's doing something. How could the Lord speak to him and move him to the next step until he gets there, right? He can't move him to the next step to accept more of what's going on in Egypt until he deals with what his brothers have done to him, until he deals with what Potiphar's wife did to him. He has to know somewhere in that process, something else is going on here. I'm not dead. And there's been twice I should have been. My brothers wanted to kill me. Potiphar could have killed me. He's the chief executioner of Egypt. There's something else happening. And in this process, I don't know how. It's not given to us. But he says to himself, God is with me. And I've been given two dreams. I've been given assurance because God was telling me these things will come to pass. He is moving in my life. Now that's amazing to us because Joseph is right. And when you say it in your life, you're right too. Jesus Christ died for your soul. You have accepted the blood of Christ, the love of God. You have embraced that. He says to you, come near to me. It's a mistake to be grieved or to be angry with ourselves about what we did in the past. He already knows that. He doesn't want to talk about that. He blots out those things so he can embrace us. And it's a shame when we won't blot them out ourselves. Move forward. Learn the lessons necessary, but let's move forward. God has sent me to preserve life. Look at verse 6. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. Joseph knows the timeline. God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Again, we can see his view and his picture of this. He's speaking beyond just his brothers coming now. There is a great deliverance that is coming from all of this. The family will come here. The family will grow and become what God has promised when my father comes to me. This is the grand and great picture beyond the life of Joseph. People I will never meet, people I will never see, people whose names I will never know will benefit from these 7 years of famine. Because this is what God is doing. Now watch verse 8. So now, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all of his house and a ruler throughout all of the land of Egypt. God has made me a father to Pharaoh. Pharaoh believes himself to be deity. He himself is a god in his own mind, in the mind of the nation. He is of Ra. He's a god himself. And Joseph said, he's made me a father to him. And he really has. Pharaoh brought him forward and received counsel from Joseph as he was just freed from his prisoner clothing. He received counsel. He followed that counsel. He loves Joseph. He trusts him with everything. God has done this too. Everything is from God. It is the way we must look at life. Verse 9. Watch the urgency here. Hurry and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all of Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. He's reminding them, look at me. It's my mouth. I am not speaking through an interpreter. I am speaking to you in our language. Go and get my father. Do not tarry. Verse 13, so you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen. And you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Again, tears flowing from his eyes. Go get my father. Now watch verse 14. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. He embraces his youngest brother from the same mother. That they are the only real brothers by mother and father. He grabs hold of Benjamin. He falls on him. And he weeps over him. And Benjamin, imagine the emotion. For the first time, your brother, the only brother you've ever heard about, is dead. And now he's alive. You see who that's pointing to? He's dead, yet he now lives, so that we can be brought near. God has done this, not me. This is not my story. This is a story of human history. God has moved for us today. Moreover, he kissed all of his brothers, and he wept over them, and after that, his brothers talked with him. First, he weeps on Benjamin's neck. It's just an amazing thing. He kisses all of his brothers, and they talk with him. I bet they did. Who wants to go first? Look, man. Everyone has an excuse, right? I was not in on that, really. I was just going along with the others, whatever they're thinking, however they speak to him. But it's not given to us in that way because Joseph is kissing them. He comes to them. They've drawn near. He's kissing them, and he's talking with them. There are no secrets anymore. There's no more hidden lies. The door has swung wide open, and so now they're going to talk. What does Joseph want to know about his brothers and their wives and their children, and some of them having grandchildren at this point? Is Joseph interested in the intimate details of their life, or does he just want kind of a broad overcast, like just kind of give me the general sense, or is he intimately concerned and involved with everything, every word they say to him? We need to know the answer to that because that's who God is. He wants to hear from you. He wants to talk to you. A price has been paid so that you would draw near. And so when we go to God in prayer, do we repeat the same thing over and over again? Thank you for saving us from our sins. Thank you for this food. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for Jesus, certainly. Amen. Is that what a father wants to hear from his children? I am getting firsthand experience in this now as a dad, and I realize that as kids are really, really young, they come in, or actually when you come home from work is even the better scenario. You open the door coming in from work, and they run to the door because dad's home. And they're just learning to talk and to communicate. So you get down on a knee and you say, how was your day? And they tell you everything. And we love that. And then they get a little older and you got to pry it out of them. I asked my beloved son just a few days ago, and another that I consider a child of mine, how was your day? How was your day today? And what do they say? It was a day. Four words, I'll take it. Some kids look at their parents and they go, come on. They love you. They care about you. They want to draw near. I realize there's something in nature that's taking place where kids are starting to push away from their parents. And the parents are pushing too. You know, it's like, all right, go get a job. But that's the process of life. It never ends, you know, when kids come home and they have their kids and you say, tell me how it's been going. Our children should be prepared to tell their parents how it's going. They want to know. They pray for you. They think about you often. And so there's a beautiful picture here of Joseph as they talk to him for the first time, hanging on every word. He's told them to go get dad, but he also wants to hear from them first. And I have an important question for all of us. Do you think Joseph would have had the strength to do this if he was still bitter and angry with his brothers? That's the challenge for us. Could he have cared intimately about his brothers who betrayed him? Could he have cared intimately and asked him how things were going if he was still angry? Imagine if he was never humbled before God in this amazing test that God put him through, and constantly looked for an opportunity to get revenge. Let's imagine Joseph is marching through these moments thinking, I'm getting everybody who's ever done me wrong. And he's got a little list. He's writing down names. He's going to get them because God promised him he would be put into power. Imagine Joseph crying out to God in his anger in all of those dark nights, not realizing that his brothers didn't do this. God has done this for his purpose. Potiphar's wife didn't do it. God was doing it. If Joseph was angry, he would say to God in his prayers, my brothers hated me. And God would say, yes, they did. And Joseph would cry out to God, my brothers were envious of me because dad loved me more. And God would say to Joseph, that's right, Joseph. That's exactly why they hated you. And Joseph could cry out and say, they sinned against me and they sinned against you when they sold me for money to complete strangers. And God would say, that's right, Joseph. They sinned against you. They surely did. It was a sinful act. I was innocent before Potiphar and his lying wife. And I'm angry about that. Yes, you were innocent in that moment, Joseph. I saw the whole thing. What good would that have done, Joseph, to be right every time? To build his own case and in that process not see what God was doing? His life is here in front of us for a reason. I want to be like Joseph. I don't want to be like Danny. In some remarkable way, he believes the vision of those dreams. He has the strength, the character, and the humility to know who God is and that God is certainly working in his life. He has said that to them word for word. You sold, God sent. Genesis 45 and verse 16. Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers have come, so it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. You see, Pharaoh loves Joseph. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart. Go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households and come to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt and you will eat the fat of the land. What a reward. Now you are commanded, do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives, bring your father and come. Also, do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. They're leaving Egypt with brand new clothes. They're going to be carried in carts, not on donkeys. They're going to be carried in carts to go back and to retrieve their father and their families. This is done with great royal presence. Verse 23, he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. For he sent his brothers away and they departed. And he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. That is amazing. Go get dad and do not let yourself be troubled. He is so connected to them and he wants them to be free and clear of all that they've done that he says, as you travel, do not start talking to each other about whose fault this is. I've already made that clear. Do not be troubled. Go. Enjoy the food, enjoy these carts, enjoy everything I've given you, the clothing, all of it. Everything's been given to you for free. Do not turn on each other. Go and get my father. Verse 25, then they went up out of Egypt and they came to the land of Canaan to Jacob, their father. And they told him, saying, here's an amazing moment in time. First of all, who's going to say it? Second of all, how do we word it? Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. Jacob is stepping into that Fred Sanford moment where he's like, oh, this is the big one. Joseph's what? We know that conversation took longer than what's recorded for us. It had to. There's no way. Oh, by the way, Joseph's alive. Let's go to Egypt. Hold on a second. There's more to that story. Yeah, I believe with the way Joseph spoke to them, that they may have had some peace about telling their father, we lied to you. We were in a terrible place then, and we were filled with envy and anger, and we made a mistake. Joseph's alive. We are sorry. But there are good things that await you, Father, in Egypt. They're going to tell him, you've got to come with us. You've got to come to Egypt. And we're going to see that Jacob has trouble with this. Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. And imagine them. They're saying, no, Dad, he's alive. We're serious. Look at all the cards. Look at what he sent us with. It's Joseph. And Jacob's still like, you know what? Because you boys are from my line, I just don't believe you. I'm not going to believe this. And wouldn't they say, then believe Benjamin? Uh-oh. The son whom he loved, the son of his old age, Benjamin, is this true? It's all true, Dad. We saw him. He sent us back. He wants us to come to Egypt. What an amazing moment in time. Verse 27, when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Then Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. It's enough. Let us go. Lessons from the life of Joseph as we looked at it here in chapter 45. Let me just read what John had for us in the beginning. Verse 1 of chapter 46. So Israel took his journey with all that he had. And this is so important for us. Jacob, called Israel here now, is going to Egypt. But we're going to see a picture of Jacob that isn't given to us in chapter 45. He offered sacrifices in Beersheba to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night, and he said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said to God, here I am. So he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt. That tells us where Jacob is right now. He's going, but he's afraid, and he should be. His grandfather, Abraham, had a lot of trouble in Egypt. His father Isaac was told directly by God not to go to Egypt. And now he's been called by a son that he thinks is dead to come see him in Egypt. He's worried. God says, do not fear, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Joseph's going to be there when you die. It is your son Joseph who lives, who will pull down your eyelids when you pass from this life. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. So they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and they went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him. So Jacob has been discussing the coming events with the Lord. It is there in Egypt that I have decided to make you a great nation. The promise to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob now has opened up to be made clear to Jacob. This is where it will begin to take place. The three lessons I see here this morning for us is, number one, God has done this. I can't emphasize this enough to myself. I'm not going to pretend that this is the important lesson for you. I know that it is. But it's very important for me. I have been hurt. I have been wronged. I have had moments in my life when I know someone went out of their way and spent extra time to make sure that I suffered. God's not dozing off on the job. He didn't forget about me. He knows exactly where I am. I am His child. He's allowed this, and I'm supposed to learn something from it. If I move forward in bitterness, anger, looking for vengeance, I will not see God's work in my life. Vengeance belongs to God. If I'm going to see God's good hand on my life and the work that He will do by His will through my life, I must let go of these things and realize, yeah, You sold me. I cried out to You and begged You not to. You sold me. God sent me. Now I have purpose. I'm no longer bitter at some other person. I am looking toward heaven. I'm looking toward God, and I'm recognizing that He is with me because I serve Him and I'm faithful to Him. And He knows my heart. He knows the love that I have for Him. He is with me, and He will see me through. God has done it. The second thing that I think is so important is Joseph saying, hurry to my father. And again, think of the brothers, your father. Yeah, I guess that's true. They're still processing that his father is their father. Every time they've spoken to him, they say, our father, your servant. And now he's everybody's dad. And it must have been tough for them to process that. In Genesis 45 and verse 10, he says, you shall be near to me, you and your children and your children's children. So for us, do you want the person who's betrayed you, who's done you wrong, do you want them to be near to you? Joseph does. It's a tough lesson. Because I can forgive somebody, I can have a good conversation with them and move past, but there's still some anger in my heart, there's still that uneasiness about what that person brings to mind when they step into the room. Sometimes I hear their name, and I those things rise up in me again. I start to think immediately, I'm avoiding that like the plague. That's not what Joseph did. He said, I want you, all of you, near to me. So again, with God, with our Father in heaven, he says, you have sinned against me, you have wronged me, you have turned your back on me. But I have done what is necessary to bring you near. Now come near. Come to me. If I want to look like the Lord, and if I'm going to be a reflection of Jesus Christ, I have got to tell the worst enemies of my life, I want you to be near. I want you to be near to me, and I want to hear the details of your life. I want to know how things are going with you. I may continue to get burned in that process by that individual, but they're going to know who I am. And I will have passed the test before God. That is more important to me than whether or not I get my way, or the revenge I think is fitting is laid down upon another person's life. They have a soul. God has died for them on the cross. He wants them as well. Come near. Come with me. I will provide for you. And again, another beautiful picture. We're talking about the shadows, the foreshadowing, the reflections of God and His Son. He is dead, now He is alive, and He says, do not be concerned about your goods in verse 20. And isn't that what God says to us? Come near to me, I will give you everything, don't be concerned about your goods. There's too many people in this world who are overly concerned about their stuff. And God says, take your eyes off of that, come to me and be near me. For, Joseph tells them, here's why you can let go of your stuff. I have given you the best of the land of Egypt, the greatest land in all the world. This is what God has said to us. Do not worry about your stuff. You're leaving the land, the earth. You're leaving the land of famine, of pestilence, of anger, envy, hatred, pain, suffering. You're leaving that and you're coming to me. Don't hang on to your stuff. There's nothing there for you. Come to me. Step into a kingdom as it is here with Egypt. Step into a kingdom of great wealth and prosperity. Have I not invited you with my own mouth? Look at the words of my mouth speaking to you. Come to me, leave your stuff, and that is what God has said to us. Man, I had a bunch of New Testament verses for y'all, but I've gone over time. Let me just share one with you. Colossians 3. Colossians 3 and verse 1. God says, don't worry about your stuff. You stay focused on me. I'm going to bring you home. Colossians 3:1, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. There's that beautiful picture. Let go of your stuff. Just for note's sake, Philippians 3:17-21, 1 Timothy 6:17-19. Tell those who are rich to share, to give their stuff away, to help those who are in need, so that they may store up for themselves treasures in heaven, where their mind is, where their heart is, where they long to be. Joseph. What an amazing man. The invitation is always made available to anyone who needs to respond to that invitation. Again, God calling to those who have wronged him and offended him, offering peace through his beloved son who has been given so that that peace may be real for us, that we may be his children. That's available to you now. Imagine Joseph saying to his brothers, go get dad, come back, I'm going to give you everything you see in this land. And one brother goes, I don't know. I kind of like starving in famine. There's a draw there for some reason. You know, I'm not sure. I may stay in Canaan. How ridiculous would that be? If you've answered correctly, that's ridiculous, then it would be ridiculous to refuse eternal life with God and hold on to this world, which you know you're going to pass from. He's bidding you to come now. He sent carts. He sent everything to bring you in so that the angels of heaven would rejoice when one sinner repents. If you need to do that, do it while we stand.